TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this afternoon on TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is, and you'll hear a little bit later from Michael Remus, who's, I believe, currently buying us some a veggie platter based on last week's request. Jam-packed 2.5 hours for you this afternoon. A bit of a late start for us, thanks to the soccer coverage. We'll be back to normal next week. But coming up on the program this afternoon, Bob Duff from the Windsor Star is going to join us, and Chris Botta from the Sports Business Journal is going to join us. You can send us any comments on Twitter at Legal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And the website for your latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. Richard, Ezra, a good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon, Drew. Oh, again, my mic. Is my mic on?
Hi, Ez.
I can't hear my mic, but
I can't hear you either, so that's okay. Sounds like I'm talking to myself.
That's okay.
Drew?
Yeah, it might be a better thing anyways if
I made that joke last week.
I know. It works 2 weeks in a row. That's okay, though.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll figure out Ezzy's mic problems in a second. Richard, good afternoon. How are you?
You know, I'm doing well, Drew. It's dragging on. We should say before we get into the interesting topic of the collective bargaining agreement.
Interesting in quotes, I think.
And the rational positions taken by both sides.
Yeah, rational in quotes again, sarcasm, I think.
That it's our essentially our 2-year anniversary here.
It is our 2-year anniversary. Isn't it amazing we've gone this far?
Yes.
I can't believe it. Ezzy, happy anniversary.
I think I'm back.
There
we
go. There you go. There now you're back there alive. Yeah, that's what we like.
Good afternoon. Here we go.
Good afternoon. Anyway,
yes. It's good. See you later.
Exactly. No, it's 2 years since we started here on TSN 1290.
You,
so happy anniversary to you both, gentlemen.
Yes, Drew. It's great. Thank you for buying me that gift today, that piece of cake.
Yes.
And then eating it.
And then eating that cake. Yeah,
nice,
exactly.
But what I had to do. Yeah.
2 years. That's a long time. Really. Feels longer than that.
Well, the show's been around for longer than that.
Yeah.
But
no,
2 years on this station.
I mean, 2 years at this station, it...
Longest running show on the station.
That's right. Yeah, we are the originator.
We need for everybody listening.
I assume the ticker tape parade is being set up outside now
for the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah,
we need somebody out there to bring us something like a cake or a pizza.
You just want cake and pizza, isn't that right?
Yeah, just something. I mean, okay. We didn't bring anything. Well, I guess Remus is going to bring something.
Yeah.
Well, there's a problem because on our way here, you gave Remus some money allegedly.
That's true, Richie. I gave Remus $20 at our pre-show meeting.
Yeah,
and then he just BBM'd me. Because we're still on BBM, we don't have iPhones.
Uh-huh.
He says, I lost the money.
Oh, here he is.
Oh, Remus is walking in right now.
Did you find the money?
Okay, Ez gave me a 20 at Starbucks. He said, go buy us some food and bring me back change. I walk out the door, I reach my pocket for the 20. It's not there.
So you lost the money?
I didn't lose. Like, you sure you gave it to me?
Drew, as a witness...
You gave him the money.
Yeah. What did I do with it?
I don't know how you lose $20. It was in your hand.
Boy, I didn't even make it to the car.
I don't know how we made it 2 years.
It's amazing. Let's get started on the on some CBA negotiations.
Oh, Remus did bring a veggie platter, though.
Yeah, we'll deal with that afterwards.
We also got Halloween candy on sale.
As you can see, we're putting on our winter weight. There's no winter classic for us to watch this year, we're putting on our winter weight.
There isn't.
You know, obviously the NHL canceled the Winter Classic yesterday. To me, and the timing just seems too soon to have made this move.
It does too, Drew. They talk about, the promotional aspect needing to get things in order. I have a hard time believing that then that needs to take place a whole 2 months in advance of the game. I mean, we're dealing with today's November 3rd.
Yeah.
The game is in 2 months. It's January 1st or 2nd. I don't know which date is this year. It's on that
I think it's the 1st.
Okay, so it's on the 1st, for example. But... this is as much a pressure. This is to me, it's all tactical. And this is the owners saying, hey, players, you think that this is going to be a bargaining chip for you? Forget about it. We're canceling it. Never mind the fact that money from the game goes where?
Into hockey-related revenue.
Which is?
Split between both sides.
So, I don't know why it would be a bargaining chip, but apparently it is.
Well, let me tell you. I mean,
I understand the aspect in terms of the NHL as a whole losing it, but the players lose as much as the owners. So why would the players be saying, you know, this is a point of pressure point?
That's right. That's what I never understood, is that both sides lose by canceling this. Now, I mean, I think it's hard to say that the owners lose more than the players, or the players lose more than the owners. Both sides take what had been a significant sum of money to go into hockey-related revenue, and it's no longer there.
And remember that the event not only is the hockey game, the NHL game between the Detroit Red Wings and the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's games, junior games, it's college games, it's events at Comerica Park, events at the Big House.
There was a whole winter hockey festival that was scheduled to go on.
So once again, the people who lose are the people associated with it, the junior players, the other players who also lose, the fans and all that. And the players, it's one game. They don't get paid any extra for the game in terms of those players playing in it. Obviously, the NHLPA gets that cut. But in any event, once again, they've cut off their nose to spite their face.
There was a payment due to the University of Michigan yesterday, November 2nd. A payment of $250,000 was due to the University of Michigan. You take $250,000 and you divide it by 30 teams. You're talking a little bit over $8,000 a team. Yeah. Those guys spend $8,000 on dinner, never mind anything else. So I can't believe that it's a money issue.
Bargaining.
No, it's all bargaining. That was just...
They could have made that payment and then wait...
It's all bargaining, Drew.
The next payment wasn't due until December 7th.
Right. All bargaining.
And so, you know, and if, say in the next 10 days they come to an agreement.
I'll bring it back.
You think they can bring it back easily?
For sure.
You're jerking people around, people that have bought tickets to and paid for hotel rooms and paid for flights. They are canceling those. I know they don't care about the fans, but I mean, I think you're playing with
fire. Fans are going to blindly support them when they come back, and they're going to buy everything, and they're going to do everything as if nothing happened. So what? And they know that. It's happened before. They have proof in the pudding. There has been a whole season lockout, and they came back stronger than ever. They know that the fans are going to be like that jilted lover, just keeps coming back and coming back and coming back.
Richie, I think that, you know, some fans this time around have probably gotten so angry that they will give up on hockey and won't buy jerseys and won't go to these, you know, tourist destination type of events. But I think you're right. I mean, for the most part, you know, let's say 90 to 95% of people that are hardcore hockey fans will go to this event again, and it will be rescheduled. They've already said that it'll happen next year at the same time. But, you know, it was... What was troubling about this is that we heard about it last week. You know, Pierre LeBrun and Darren Drager, all the insiders were saying that this week, you know, the Winter Classic was going to be canceled. And then actually on Friday afternoon, you know, David Schultz came out and said, you know, they might wait another couple weeks to cancel this thing to see what's going to happen. But again,
they think the players believed it to be, and David Schultz wrote about it on the Globe site.
Yep.
The players believed it to be a pressure point for the owners. And the owners said, okay. And it's exactly what he writes in the article. The one governor, I'm not sure if it's, I think it's current governor.
They called their bluff.
Said, okay, see ya. Game's over. Yep.
If you think this is really a pressure point for us, if you think that we're, you know, that this is, that, you know, taking this away from us, you know, is going to affect us, we'll take it away from ourselves to prove.
That's right.
It's like you said, it's just petty, pointless arguments. This is Bill Daly's quote.
Here we go.
The logistical demands for staging events of this magnitude made today's decision unavoidable, said NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. We are simply out of time.
Simply wasn't unavoidable, but okay, keep going.
That's the quote. We are extremely disappointed for our fans and for those affected to have to cancel the Winter Classic and Hockey Town Winter Festival
events.
Fans
aren't stupid enough to take any of these comments by Fair or Daly remotely seriously.
I'd rather they just not mention the fans at all.
Yeah, stop.
It's really making the fans seem stupider than they are
100%.
By even pretending it has anything to do with the fans.
That's right.
You're talking about...
So condescending.
What are you on the hook for? If you pay Michigan, each team's on the hook for $8,000 and you give another month of... You get another month, and if they cancel on December 7th, so be it. Everybody knows, expects it to be canceled, but you don't, I mean, calling this bluff and all this, I know it's part of negotiations.
No, it's part of negotiations for these guys, not many other people.
You're saying that they're not negotiating intelligently?
Yep, they're not.
You know, nobody, you know, at some point in time, you know, both sides, and we talk about this all the time.
We talk about every week, and every week we come in here, and every week we've come in here, and a week's gone by, and they haven't met. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. If you're trying to get a deal done, you sit in the room in a meeting. We keep saying that. That's just common sense. So sitting around in your luxurious hotel and reading books and watching, certainly not watching ESPN because they're not going to talk about hockey. Actually, they're not going to watch anything on TV that's talking about hockey. Why would they? Exactly. So the point is they're sitting around
NBC
doing nothing.
NBC Sports Network, who's the partner, isn't talking hockey right now. There's no hockey to talk about.
It's about soccer, so.
Well, guess what? They'll be the big soccer station now. And good for them. What are they going to do? Sit around and wait for you to come home? They've been waiting for you for months.
By the way, Winter Classic is great, and they make a lot of money on it, blah, blah, blah. What, are they that excited for that 1.7 or 2.3 rating?
Supposedly, but I don't buy it.
You can get that with the...
Wait, you know what? I think
you can get that with a terrible NBA team on a Saturday afternoon.
If anything has taught me about these TV contracts, yeah. The ratings don't matter. You know?
Yeah, they matter.
They matter, but they don't really matter because they...
The averages matter.
Well, do you think advertisers are paying any more or any less for the NHL as a result? They're paying.
Well, they'll pay on an average basis in terms of like the past few years. What is the Winter Classic average? And they'll pay on that. But that what they don't pay based on that one day.
No,
I
know.
Beforehand.
But did you ever think in a million years you'd see an NHL TV contract worth $200 million a year?
Is that much, Drew?
For the NHL, given the ratings that they bring in, I think it is a hell of a lot.
$200 million a year for a league when the other leagues are close to $1 billion.
Look at the ratings difference.
I realize, but it's just on a scale.
Well, of course it's on a scale, but it's not like, you know...
Is $200 million that much money?
Well...
They gave it to two players in Minnesota, and it's a television deal for an entire year to broadcast like 150
games. 150
games
that don't rate anything. The NHL should be lucky that anybody wants to broadcast.
You're markets in New York and LA and all that stuff, right? So you're going to get that. And they put the same three teams on. That's the best part about the whole parity thing. As they play the same four teams. We always say that. They play the same four teams on TV anyway in the States.
Right. What are they going to... I mean, why would they start Pip? You know, they're not going to start playing the Dallas's and
again,
St. Louis's.
You know, and so,
well, ratings aside, though, I mean, it's unfortunate because this game was going to be, you know... For lack of a better term, the big one, right? And
by the way, the best part about, as he didn't interrupt, the best part about these games is that they're awful. But
yeah,
keep going.
Because they're playing in substandard conditions. Yeah.
Right.
And last year's game played in a swamp.
Yeah. Right. And it's not about actually the quality of the hockey. It's obviously the spectacle.
Exactly.
And you know, the ratings aside,
that's where the money is.
You know, it has become a big event. You know, for the NHL, fans look forward to it. 115,000 people were going to be at the Detroit Toronto game alone, so it's unfortunate. I mean, I don't really look at it in terms of ratings or whatever. I'm looking at it in terms of fans, and Canadian fans were into this game. There was a Canadian team in the Winter Classic this
HBO
year, as opposed
too.
To last year, the HBO series, which millions of people were a fan of.
That's true.
This is just all. It's not. This isn't to me just about money here. This is again, like we're talking about. For fans that were looking forward to this, New Year's, everybody was looking forward to this. The fans, there's hundreds of thousands of people. I think they estimated there was close to $100 million that was going to be lost to the Michigan economy, the Detroit economy specifically, in an area that's still reeling from the recession. Obviously, that's money related. But, I mean, it's all bad news. It's all negative. And as far as what this is going to mean as far as... you know, when this deal's going to get done, this current CBA, I mean, I think it's not really going to have that much of an impact, but it's all bad news for fans, and it's already been 2 months of bad news.
Let's talk about the numbers after the break.
Okay, why don't we do that? Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to break down some of the numbers. Richard crunched some of the numbers about where they really are, how far apart they really are, and when the real breaking points may come into effect. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Next week at Rumors, starting November the 8th, so Thursday, Friday, Saturday, at Rumors next week, Bobby Slayton is going to be there.
Bobby Slayton.
Concert series event. You know him from such movies as Get Shorty, Ed Wood, Bandits, Dreamgirls. He's been on The Tonight Show dozens of times. Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. He does a voice on Family Guy, Mind of the Married Man. He's been on HBO. Concert series event, Bobby Slayton, next weekend at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, 488-4520 for tickets. And as well, tickets for Rob Schneider go on sale Monday, November the 5th at 1 p.m. So
did
Rob,
did you say Movember?
I was just going to say that. Did you say November or Movember?
I said November.
I'm pretty sure.
No,
let's get Remus in here because I'm pretty sure you just said Movember.
I'm pretty sure I said November. But anyways, tickets for Rob Schneider go on sale Monday at Rumors, 488-4520.
Awesome.
You can get tickets for Rob Schneider. He's coming February 28th. through March 2nd.
I think his best appearance was in the film Big Daddy. That was his best piece of art.
Yeah, that you think
art
Academy Award winning?
Yeah, I think so. He was great.
Nothing like the art in your condo, Richie.
When he got into an argument with the little kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I remember. He's very good. Anyways, check out rumorscomedyclub.com for all your information, or give him a call at 488-4520. Richie, you crunched some numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if these are... I go based on kind of the information that we've been provided, and I'm not necessarily sure this is exactly right, but it's not gospel, but it's pretty close to gospel? Whatever you say, Drew.
Okay.
So last week we spoke on the show about an article written by Tyler Dello, which Remus did tweet out, and he can tweet out again. It basically said that if you take the NHL offer number 3, and the Players Association offer number 3.
Now, the Players Association offer was, we'll go to 50-50 right now, yes, as long as you guarantee all the contracts you have signed.
That's exactly right.
In full value.
So just to quickly talk about it, and he documented it in his spreadsheets, the NHL offer goes from 57 last year to 50% the entire way through. The Players Association goes to 55% in the first year, 54% in the second, 52.6 in the third, 51.3 in the fourth, and then 50 in the fifth and sixth. So he's basing his numbers are based on a 6-year plan.
So the NHLPA's offer gradually goes down to 50%. The NHL's offer immediately
exactly.
goes to
50%. And so the NHLPA offer over the course of their offer, the average cut is 52.1%. Ends up at 50 though for negotiating purposes in the next negotiation. Not that you need to negotiate off of it, but people do. The NHL offer is 50 right away and ends at 50. So what you have there is a percentage difference over the course of it of about 2.1%.
So there's 2.1% difference between the NHL's offer and the NHLPA's offer.
So
on an average over 6 years.
So in Tyler's numbers, what he does is he takes a 5% growth rate. You know, that's the closest they're going to get. That's pretty close, you know, in terms of if it's a 5% growth rate. Now, I guess you're taking into account also the possibility that because of the relationship here and because of the possible adverse effects of the lockout, take 5% as an average increased growth rate of the game, which is quite significant, by the way, compared to everything else in the world.
And that's sort of what let me just interrupt you for a second. You're right. The GDP in Canada is expected to grow at, I think, a rate of 2.9% in 2013. Meanwhile, the NHL's growth rate is expected to be at a minimum at 5%.
Especially now because the Canadian TV deal is coming up in 2 years.
Correct.
And next year they got the U.S. deal.
So the NHL deal is growing at a much higher rate than, say, society is.
Right. So what he has is the difference. He has, it's 12, what the payout ends up being is $12,303,000,000 for the PA, so based on their numbers.
Let's just round it to $12,300,000,000.
Okay?
Okay.
The NHL offer ends up $11,800,000,000.
So you're talking a difference between the two offers of just about $500 million.
Yeah, specifically the number is $478 million.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So just $487 million, excuse me. Okay? So that's over the course of the 6 years, though. That's not 1 year.
So it's about $80 million a year, but $480 million over the course of six years.
And he breaks it down that way.
Okay.
Now, you look at the collective bargaining agreement, and we're not entirely sure of everything here, but look at the CBA and CBA clause, the CBA standard player contract, which is Exhibit 1 in the current CBA or the locked out CBA.
Okay.
It says that the player's salary shall be, in the quoting here, in consecutive semi-monthly installments on the 15th and 30th day of each month following the commencement of the NHL regular season or following the dates of reporting, whichever is later.
Okay, so that means that the players get paid on the 15th and 30th
every month
during the course of the regular season.
Yes.
So that would probably start October the 15th would be their first payment?
Yes, because they don't report, looks like, based on my research, until about September 17th this year is when they were planned to report.
Right.
So the first payment would be October 15th.
Okay, so October 15th would be when the NHL players get paid their first paycheck.
Yeah.
And the last paycheck would probably be, because they don't get paid for the playoffs, probably April 15th or April 30th.
Well, March 30th, because the season ends April 13th, I checked.
So wouldn't they get paid for those games on April 15th?
That's a good question. Again, that's exactly the little bit of the
those are the uncertainties, but let's go with it.
Okay.
Your
so
point.
Do they get paid during the regular season? Do they get paid, you know,
go with
proactively?
It.
Anyhow, okay. We're not trying to get too in-depth here, but Dave Schultz says that the players are going to get paid on November 10th, so I'm a little bit confused as to that because that seems to contradict what's in the CBA. But in any event, okay, you look at that and you say, okay, what was you look at the revenue earned last year by the NHL and the NHLPA. And jointly, it was $3.3 billion.
Right.
Okay?
Of which the players get 57% of it.
Right. So if you go based on a 50-50 split right now,
mm-hmm.
okay, we'll talk about this and we'll talk about another option after. You go based on a 50-50 split. So the players already get $1.6 billion this year.
Right.
Right?
$1.65, I think, to be...
$65 billion, excuse me. Yes, $1.65 billion. Now, assuming, and this is in terms of when they're getting paid, but assuming they get paid on the 15th and 30th, and it starts October 15th, and it ends on March 30th. Okay?
Yeah.
But they get paid for obviously playing the whole season. That makes 12 pay periods.
So they get 12 paychecks over the course of the 7 months, let's say.
Yes, 12. And each paycheck, as a totality in terms of all players, would be $137 million
per paycheck.
Per pay period.
So each time that the players get paid, they get $137 million.
Yep.
And you come to that number by dividing
$1.65 billion
divided by 12.
Right.
Pay periods.
Yes.
Right.
So if you think about it, you look at the numbers before, and it's $487 million apart. The question then is to me... Again, this isn't exact science. The question
$487 million apart in the respective six-year offers.
Based on 5% growth rate.
Right.
The question then to me is, what's the cutoff date?
Meaning once the NHL, to bridge, you know, once the NHLPA loses out on four paychecks,
right.
That would pretty much bridge the gap between the $487 million in offers.
That's exactly right. So you look at, okay, so if they get, you know, they lose their first payment. Okay?
Right.
Which they have.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
They've lost two.
And they've lost two, based on this,
soon
right?
To be
they've
three
lost
in two. A week.
So, if they lose four, they've lost $550 million. Four paychecks, based on the numbers we have here.
Right.
$550 million.
But they've gotten some escrow.
But escrow's from the previous year.
They have gotten escrow, yeah. Exactly right. But escrow, all escrow is just to explain to people if they don't know, escrow is a holdback by the league to make sure they haven't paid more than their percentage, the percentage out than they're supposed to.
Right, correct.
Okay, so 57% last year. If the league pays out 58, they get to hold the escrow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And that's significant because if you think about this idea, and that's what, you know, it is a little bit, it is very confusing, actually.
But
because that's, I just want to say something because that's important, Drew, because... This whole idea of the players saying, coming out and saying that the owners just want to slash our salaries, it's not that simple. What they're saying is the percentage of revenue has gotten so high that the salary cap is too high. So that what happens is essentially, if you want to look at it, Richie, and correct me if I'm wrong here.
Okay.
Okay, they've already said that they're going to honor this year. They're going to make whole this year. They already... The NHL's,
well, we don't know if that's for sure.
Okay, but they said that there would be a transition period, right?
Right. Now, that's a little bit gray area.
Right. But essentially, in years 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6,
right.
That escrow that they were supposed to get, so each salary... Because when you sign a contract... And correct me if I'm wrong. When you sign a contract for $7 million,
right.
Some of that gets held back.
That's right.
And that's already in the old CBA. So
right.
Essentially, you're not getting
CBA.
That... What you would get back, you're not getting back. If you want to look at it like that.
Well, in some senses, but the point is, Ezzy, when they're getting paid this year in October, that's money they earned last year that was held back that they're now
right,
getting.
Right.
So maybe it helps them in a practical life sense.
But it's not actual
it's
revenue.
It's not anything
right.
earned this year.
Mm-hmm. But if you look at it like their salaries are getting cut 12%, well, that's kind of what the escrow was that you're just not getting back.
Well, I mean, but escrow also, I mean, I don't know why escrow is such a big deal, only because it really is dependent on how much revenue was earned.
Right.
Well, any event,
the reason escrow is a big deal is because you earn $10 million, but your paycheck is not for that amount because there's a holdback to make sure that
right.
the numbers really jive.
And
well,
that's
if
why
you
the
wanted
guys,
a hard cap, you wouldn't have an escrow.
Yeah, and the guys that make a lot of money get
revenues.
Hurt more. If you make $10 million, 1.2 goes
well,
into escrow.
But, I mean, the truth of the matter
significant.
Is... Yes, but it's significant, but that's the problem with tying everything to
that's
the
right.
revenue. If you don't reach your revenue projections, your options are we'll pay you everything, but we might come to you for a check because right. we don't make our revenue projections.
Right.
Or we just take a little bit off of each paycheck so you never really see it,
right.
and you might get it back at the end, and you
that's
usually
right.
do.
And we've talked about this, and we know what this is all about at this point, this 50. Well, we all know.
But I want to finish off with Richie's point here is on this topic.
Well, we'll do it quick. Okay, so the point is that you have four pay periods here. So October 15th, October 30th, November 15th, okay?
Yeah, and November 30th.
If you have November 30th. To me, that's, based on these numbers, that's the point of kind of no return for the PA. Because regardless of what you set yourself up for in the next negotiation, if after November 30th you've lost $550 million, then you would have been better off accepting the NHL deal. Offer, which was $487 million, apart from your original PA, your third offer. Meaning, to me, and I realize there's a couple factors here. One of which is obviously the owners lose money to her making money. Okay, but they make more money. They're not as concerned about it.
And some
owners don't make money. Another thing to take into account. Also understand that players are making money overseas. I don't think they're making $80 million, though.
Well,
so that's a factor, but not a significant factor. To me, if you're going to lose $550 million. Not an exact science, so we can be correct. Stand to be corrected. $550 million, and your offers were $487 million apart, logically,
you should take the one that you lose less money.
You've lost, regardless of what you agree to.
You've lost. Well, every time that the players don't get paid, they lose money that can never be recouped.
And that's based on a 50-50 split. You remember, that's a low. That's probably basically as low as the PA probably will agree to.
Mm-hmm.
If you go based on a 55% split, which is what the PA proposes in the first year back under their third offer, you're losing $152 million per pay period.
You just keep, well, every time.
So the math doesn't seem to make sense for them past November 30th, if that's how, you know.
So that Schultz so obviously it, says it's not, different, it's but. Safe to say that we talked about the point of diminishing returns.
Yes.
Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail wrote about that. That's November 30th.
At that point
to
in
me,
time.
To me, it seems to, based on the CBA, they pay the 15th and the 30th, that would be the time that it would say.
So they don't sign a CBA by November 30th, and what they're trying to go for, they're going to lose that money and they're never going
to
get back, really.
Seems like it's
if man. If they yes, at that point, November 30th, it seems they would have they lose more money from sitting out games than they do from just accepting
that
quote-unquote bad offer from the owners.
Now, if they get paid on, say, April 15th, as you were mentioning before, say they get paid there,
it moves it back 2 weeks again.
No, necessarily. I mean, take your average down.
Right.
But it probably won't take it down. It won't take it down by 80 mil. That's how far apart you are.
Every paycheck they lose is a paycheck that's gone forever. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 1 o'clock, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And Michael Remus joins us to publicly embarrass myself. Is that right? I believe that I just for the record, I want to say that today is November the 3rd.
But it's also November because Illegal Curve is participating.
We're not here to embarrass you. As he just asked me to check the tape, so we check the tape.
Here we're here to embarrass him.
Let's hear it.
PC2, am I on?
Tickets for Rob Schneider go on sale Monday, November the 5th at 1 p.m.
That's fully Mo, man. That's 100% Mo.
Apparently,
that's Mo, yeah.
One more time?
Yeah, one more time.
November the 5th at 1 p.m.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, admittedly, I said Movember instead of November. Yeah. I'm getting into the spirit of things. Yeah. Apparently, this little bit of a mustache that I have, you know, 5 days in is affecting my brain. But
when you walk the streets, people cry seeing that, but yeah.
Yeah, well, trust me, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah. True, that's a mustache that looks like Kit Kat chocolate on your upper lip there.
Might be that, too. It might be that, too. Let's talk about the CHLPA, because last week...
Yep.
On this program.
On this fine program.
On this fine program, we said that the CHLPA, I believe the words we used was sketchy.
Yep, sketchy.
Boy, did we nail that one.
That's right.
Just when you thought that this story couldn't get any weirder, throughout the course of this week, it has just managed to take so many different twists and turns and cases of identity, mistaken identity, and... It's just one of the more bizarre stories that we've heard in hockey in a long time. It involves Derek Clark. It involves Randy Gumbly. It involves George LaRocque. And it involves, apparently, another guy named Derek Clark. Ezzy, are you Derek Clark?
I tweeted this last night because people were wondering if I was Derek Clark. I'm not Derek Clark. You know what the funniest thing is? This story has gotten so... It's really bizarre is the best word to describe it. But the funniest thing is... We were talking about this last night. Everybody is walking away now from this thing. The law firms that were associated, all three law firms have basically washed their hands of this.
Because no law firm would ever want to be associated with a guy who's been convicted of being a fraud, who's a fraudster.
But the funniest thing is Dave Naylor, who I know that you tried to get on today, and hopefully we'll have on in the near future. We've had him on Illegal Curve before. He did some investigative work for TSN. and he discovered that there was a PowerPoint presentation that had his name under it. I mean, this is all so weird. And then, you know, George Larac is defending this thing, but the player, I believe his last name, Desmond, on the Halifax Mooseheads. Was it Desmond? Maybe we can pull that up. The player that had filed suit in it was Nova Scotia court. Was it Nova Scotia court? The player that was going to be the first one to file suit against...
Yeah, he pulled it yesterday.
He pulled it. So he's pulled it. The law firms are out. This Derek Clark guy, I don't know if we've nailed down which Derek Clark guy
it is,
but I don't know if he's still in. I don't know if Larac has said he's out. So I don't know what's going to happen here, but it looks like this whole thing is crumbling quickly.
Here's how it works. Derek Clark is actually Derek Clark, and he is the spokesperson for the CHLPA. Unfortunately for Derek Clark, he also looks very similar to Randy Gumbly. And I mean, Remus, you can tweet out the pictures of him. There's an article in the Toronto Star about it. Derek Clark and Randy Gumbly look very similar. Randy Gumbly is persona non grata based on some dealings he's had with junior hockey, largely in the Ontario area.
Mm-hmm.
He's been convicted of fraud. But so Randy Gumbly is not involved, allegedly, in the CHLPA. Still hard to see if that's official or not. But apparently Randy Gumbly's brother, Glenn Gumbly, is involved in the CHLPA.
Oh.
So I have trouble believing that, you know, Randy Gumbly really isn't involved. I just think maybe they tried to hide his involvement a little bit. But so there's Derek Clark, and he's the spokesperson, and Derek Clark hasn't done anything wrong based on everyone's estimation. He's just the spokesperson. Randy Gumbly is not involved, allegedly, and he's persona non grata. His brother, Glenn Gumbly, is involved. Nothing wrong with him. And Georges Larac, who was involved, is no longer involved. He's out because he says it's just too much.
Hell of an operation they got.
It's a hell of an operation they got going on there is right. You know, just when you didn't think it was confusing enough, each day there's a new layer of confusion added to this story. But most importantly, it really goes back to our initial point. Is there a need for a CHL Players Association?
Well,
and secondly, the method in which these gentlemen, whomever is involved, have gone about it, is that the proper way
in order to facilitate
change in the CHL?
An unprofessional, self-serving attempt to... deal with players' rights under the CHLPA. Whether the whether there's a need for a CHLPA, I lean towards no rather than yes. But I'm open to listening to the arguments for and against it. I just think that the players have a certain benefit. We talked about it last week. They work minimum wage. They work 8 hours a day. They're making just over $20,000 probably. The benefits they have of getting put up a room and board. They're not paying rent. They get a stipend. They get their sticks, and they get an education package and all the things that come along with it. David Branch, by the way, who I highly respect, has estimated that he probably invests $35,000 to $40,000 per year into a player. So. If the minimum wage is going to be less, and they're not working more than that, the minimum wage is going to be less than what is being invested in them, whether it's as a specific monetary value or a future value, I think is something they have to look into. And the question is, are you going to fight for something that twofold is going to actually make you lose money, but maybe more importantly, and I've heard David Branch say this, are you going to fight for something, and he didn't say it this way, but are you going to fight for something that, if it is successful, may put these teams... may limit the number of teams in the CHL based on cost, and if that's the case, that do you then thereby cut off jobs through this process? So there's a lot of moving parts, and I think that those need to be taken into account. In terms of the player people involved and the players involved in this operation, clearly it's unprofessional, bordering on some other things, and... the people in charge have no idea what they're doing. So if this is ever going to happen, it needs to be a respectable group of professionals who canvass the questions and look into whether or not it's a worthy to even move forward to try to attempt to form a CHLPA and look at the costs and the benefits. And if it is, then move forward and try and speak to the players. But another factor is, Drew. And Ezzy, I'll throw it to you here, Ezzy. But another factor is a lot of these players also do get some form of representation through their agents. Now, I realize it's not the same thing as a union, but... and one other thing, excuse me, I want to also talk about the fact that they've taken advantage of kids here. putting them in and just making them sign. Like, it's kind of something, these kids are under 18. And the question is, you know, should they be able to sign a 16 or 17-year-old? I think John Shannon said that yesterday. A 16 or 17-year-olds, should they be able to sign because they're not of age?
Well,
who should be making that decision? Their parents, if their parents are involved.
Well, their parents, or agents, or whomever it is. I mean, you know, and it sounds like some of their look. I mean,
if I went into Eddie Thousands and Eddie signed this, don't worry about it, just sign it. Which is basically what they're alleging Larocq did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and there's a lot of problems involved with how they went about this, and we're not going to debate the point of whether or not a CHLPA is necessary. We don't really know enough about the inner machinations of a CHL team.
And they certainly don't.
And they certainly don't as well. But their methods about going about this is a textbook, is a PhD in not, you know, making yourself legitimate and, you know, violating really a lot of, you know, probably best practices for how you go about in developing trust. You know, trust to begin with, and then secondly, you know, how they go about getting these people on board. Like you said, there's a lot of kids involved in this who put their name out there that probably shouldn't have, and are now being, you know, being made to look quite foolish.
Now you're seeing players that were that were formerly not coming out saying that you know, that he was lying about how many players were interested in joining this union. But, you know, back to the Canadian Hockey League, I mean, this is a very well-run organization. I mean, you're talking about players coming over from Europe that want to join this league so they have a better chance at playing in the NHL. And, you know, when Richie mentions $35,000 to $40,000 of investment, you're talking about facilities, you're talking about training, you're talking about equipment, coaching, all of this stuff. These guys live like kings. They're kings in, you know, small towns, Windsor, whatever, Peterborough. I mean, This isn't a mom and pop run league here, and you know, hopefully, if anything comes out of this forming of the CHLPA, it's that certain issues that would have been addressed by the CHLPA are addressed. And you know, if you can improve the education after the, you know, as far as, you know, the age and all that, I mean, these kids make the decisions with their parents. If you want to play as a 14 or 15 year old, I don't think that there's I mean, the issue here is mainly, are these kids getting the same opportunities, educational opportunities as kids in high schools across Canada? And, you know, that should probably be improved. And as far as the running of the league or anything, I don't think that's the issue here. It's really, this is probably the wrong group of people that should be addressing it, to be honest with you.
I didn't even mention, before we go to break, I didn't even mention that apparently somebody, according to George Larocq, loosened the bolts on his cart, on his tire, on his wheel, and his tire fell off while he was driving, and he thinks it's tied to the CHLPA.
That just adds another bizarre layer to the story.
Yeah.
Well, we already knew George Larocq had a screw loose.
Exactly.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in 10 minutes, Chris Botta from the Sports Business Journal is going to join us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza. 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done.
Some Carbone on Thursday.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what'd you go for?
Boy Bellers.
Well,
you guys weren't in attendance.
Well, we'll deal with that later. We'll deal with that later off air. What kind of pizza did you have?
I think it was a pepperoni and mushroom.
Really?
It's good.
Yeah? You're usually a prosciutto kind of guy.
I'll eat anything on a pizza these days.
You're not picky.
No.
Fair enough. The NHL and NHLPA... how do I want to start this? Let me rephrase. Last night, reports came out that the NHL...
Coincidentally,
right after the NHL canceled the Winter Classic. There was a report that came out that the NHL offered to the NHLPA that they would take responsibility for the quote-unquote make-whole provision.
Which was classified as a major concession, even though it's them who handed out the contracts. But anyways...
The make-whole provision is what allows for the NHL to bring down the share of revenue from, say, 57% to 50%. Initially, in the NHL's first offer, that was going to be the responsibility, so the reduction
in money,
you know, put it in layman's terms as simplistically as I can, the reduction in money was going to fall on the shoulders of the players and not the owners.
Yes.
So reports came out last night that the owners said, we'll take that on ourselves. We'll be responsible for paying that. Seems like a decent concession.
I know. It seems like a classic case of offering a really unreasonable deal, slowly coming down and down and down, and then saying what you're doing is reasonable, even though the original part was probably unreasonable.
Fine. Fair enough.
Drew, to be honest with you, I know you're going to continue here. What the NHLPA wants is for the NHL to accept that third offer or be closer to that third offer, and it's not.
Well, and most, I think a lot of people would realize that that third offer from the NHLPA is the most reasonable one of them all.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Most and we people, went over them. I mean, the first two weren't.
Well, the third one is the easiest one to implement, and it's reasonable. Both sides would say, okay, that seems fair, regardless.
Because you know the NHL wants to get down to 50-50
immediately. But they also don't want to be responsible for the contracts they signed, which to me is unreasonable.
Right.
Anyway, so this report came out yesterday that the NHL owners offered to the NHLPA that they would take responsibility for the make-whole provision. Everybody went a little bit crazy for a bit, talking about it, look at how great it is, whatever.
Face value, Drew.
Face value. Donald Fehr sent out the following memo, and I'll read it verbatim.
This morning.
He sent it out, he sent it out last night,
but
and it was publicized this morning. This is a courtesy of the CBC website. The following is a copy of the memo sent by NHLPA Executive Director Donald Fehr to NHL players, and I quote, "You may have seen media reports this evening of a supposed league quote-unquote offer regarding the quote-unquote make-whole aspect of the negotiations. There have been no proposals from either side since the last talks took place on October 18th. As was discussed in detail by Steve Fehr on the executive board / negotiating call yesterday, so Thursday, in informal conversations with the NHL this week, we have continued to explore how we can get back to the table and discussed with the NHL the issues we need to resolve, including the make-whole provision."
Right, so what that's
I'm not done yet. We will continue to keep you updated, and we'll let you know if anything concrete comes from these discussions. Meanwhile, you should not read too much into media reports about informal phone calls. Following further phone conversations today being Friday, Bill Daly and Steve Fehr will meet tomorrow, Saturday, in a city and location that both sides have agreed to keep confidential in an attempt to focus on the talks and not on conducting media scrums. We will update everyone following this meeting tomorrow.
So what that's saying is their message is don't read too much into Darren Dreger's report of informal talks, but in the same statement they admit that those informal talks included talk of the make-whole provision. So they're saying we did talk about that and it is potentially a game changer.
The problem you have here is the reporting, as has been written about, and Elliot Freeman's talked about how he's lost sources during this whole thing, is becoming apparent that it's polarizing a lot of the writers and their sources.
They're trying to disseminate information as quickly as possible, and sometimes they're...
This is a classic Twitter world we're in, is that something comes out and it hasn't been confirmed by both sides, and if it hasn't been confirmed by both sides, then it's...
Now, what it seems, what it seems like is that the NHL may have mentioned something about make whole, and maybe we'll take it on our shoulders. No, but
even that technicality aside, the idea that it's being spun in the media as a major concession to me is insulting.
I agree with you, and this is why. And Richie mentioned the Twitter world, and okay, what was the big news Friday? Obviously, the big news was the Winter Classic was going to be canceled, which was just another depressing tidbit in a two-month period of depression for hockey fans. So what came out late Friday night? Darren Dreger reported, okay, you know, let's not get too negative here. The owners are willing to, you know, pay for this make-whole stipulation. Okay, so obviously that means, okay, the owners are might be moving here.
Sure, but the owners think it's a major concession,
right?
Because it's their message,
right?
I mean,
and this
so
is
if Darren Source was an owner, and he said he spoke to the PA, but if Darren Source is an owner, the idea that I can understand, you know, again, but I guess it's in the realm of face value. It's a major concession, right, if you talk to the owner. Sure, it is, because that's the whole idea. They set it all up in advance.
Right.
This is a schedule. This is what yep. they can get. You know, this is how they're going to go forward on this, and they're going to make a concession based on what they term to be a concession. Now, are they within their rights to do it? Absolutely. Does it mean it's reasonable? No.
And this is one thing that's undeniable, Richie, because this is all PR. This is all PR.
PR, all
this is all PR chess playing.
It's like,
right?
Romney Obama. I'm not even
it is. It really is. It's chess playing, and the reason why it doesn't matter for the NHLPA to say come out and, you know, Drew, it's important to read that. But to me, that says, if you really read and dissect what you just read off the CBC website, mm-hmm. it's saying that we did bring this back, this make-whole thing, but it was an informal conversation. It wasn't a formal proposal. Well, okay, yes, we know that. You're just making it, you know, seem like it wasn't.
The PA is saying it's not necessarily the case. Like, you don't know, you know, if this is the thing. The owners could have said, we're going to take responsibility for the make whole. We'll pay you 3% for the next 30, you know, or right. the next 33 years. That's technically saying they're going to take responsibility for the make whole.
Right.
Maybe it was the most unreasonable proposal for taking responsibility for the make whole. So let's be real here.
I think that the problem, everybody, you know, like you say about the U.S. election, which is thankfully coming to an end on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Everybody has their...
Why thankfully? I've loved it.
I'm ready to be done with it. I think that everybody has their ways of disseminating their information and putting the spin on it that they want.
And they think, and they talk to the public as if the public are a bunch of idiots.
It's not hard for them to spin messages. Everybody's the thing that's really
if you
really,
buy it, if you buy the garbage,
exactly,
if
and the thing that's
the
unfortunate. Everybody's on Twitter. Everybody's on the NHL website. Everybody's on the TSN website. All they have to do is one, they release it, and then all of a sudden, 50 media outlets pick it up. Mm-hmm. And what's unfortunate and undeniable is that the NHL and the NHLPA have already lost the PR battle. They both lost. You can't win anything right now.
I think the owners are winning more than the players lately.
They both lost.
But they're both losing. I agree with you.
They've canceled the Winter Classic, and they've canceled hockey.
Within the realm of them both losing, I think the owners are now getting a leg up.
Hang on. I agree with you that I think the owners had been winning lately.
Yep.
I think if the owners come out yesterday and say they don't cancel the Winter Classic yesterday, they maybe
wait 2 weeks.
They wait 2 weeks. Everybody's expecting.
And by
them.
The way, we still haven't talked enough about the fact that they canceled the Winter Classic and then released this news. Come on.
Of course. It's obviously done in a game plan. You know, you're clouding your bad news with supposedly good news.
The Frank runs higher on the Friday in the census and then the next day making the new offer?
Yeah. Of course. Look,
you got to read between the
lines. I might have been born
here at
night, but I wasn't born last night.
I understand that. I understand your point completely. But I think the NHL yesterday could have handled the Winter Classic differently. Everyone was waiting for them to cancel it. If they don't cancel it, and you don't even have to say anything. You don't
That's
have to
right.
say we're not canceling it.
That's right.
You just don't cancel it. It gives people some hope, and it says, look at how reasonable the NHL is being. They're going to take this $250,000 hit, which is really chump change, but it's the optics of the matter. And, you know, maybe they really want to be part of
That's
the...
Right.
They want to make the deal.
They want to go to war.
They
want to say, hey, PA, see that?
Yeah.
See you later. And here's this. We're releasing this information.
They could have used
they
that opportunity.
They want to go to war. Gary Bettman's a fighter.
They could have used that opportunity yesterday better, and I think it was a error in their way that how they did it.
They certainly haven't been seamless in this whole process.
Nobody has been. Nobody, you know, when you fight really dirty, neither side comes out of it really clean. Something like that makes more and better sense than an analogy. Let's go to break. When we come back, Chris Botta is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 1:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website with all your latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL and CBA news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's from the Sports Business Journal, Chris Botta. Chris, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Drew. Hey, Ezra. Hey, Richard. How are you guys doing? All right?
We're doing very well. How about yourself?
Doing great.
You're okay there on Long Island?
Very lucky. My family and I, we lost power for a couple of days, but just minimal damage to our property. Very fortunate compared to a lot of other people. So we're going to try to help out people as much as we can in the meantime.
Absolutely. That's great. Our thoughts, of course, with everybody in the New York, New Jersey area. It was about a year ago this time. We were there last year. We saw a couple games on Long Island and New Jersey and Madison Square Garden.
Have a good time?
We had a great time. It was my bachelor party, as it happened.
What'd you think of the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum?
Well, I suspect that I think we understood why they decided to move to Brooklyn, and we'll, I think we'll get to that a little bit later on in the interview, because the Coliseum had shown its years. How about that?
Yeah, but every seat is a good seat. I'll give them that.
That's true. And you can have 10 of them all by yourself if you really want.
Yeah, on several nights a year, yeah. True.
Chris, you recently wrote an article in the Sports Business Journal sort of about the leadership of Gary Bettman as NHL commissioner. He's obviously been in the commissioner role for a number of years at this point in time. You know, based on your article, it seems that even if the season is canceled, it doesn't appear that Gary Bettman is going anywhere. Why is he Teflon?
He's Teflon because all that matters, guys, is what a majority of only 30 people need care about him and think of him. And the bottom line is that no matter what happens in this latest CBA negotiation, I believe very strongly, and certainly talk to people on and off the record for the article, they also believe strongly that he will continue to satisfy enough people to keep him in place. I mean, it's as simple as that. My favorite quote is actually in the story is from a former Pittsburgh Penguins governor who said that he said Gary has his critics, but none of them are any of his bosses. Now, listen, I think it's reasonable to say that there are probably a few teams right now who aren't too thrilled, and maybe there'll be a different batch of teams whenever the CBA gets done. But he's got enough of 30 people or 30 ownership groups who like him, and I think he's in this for the long haul.
Chris, you look at the players, and they come out and they make comments. There's a lot of vitriol, obviously, towards Bettman as opposed to towards the owners as a whole.
Yeah,
certainly the owners of the teams of the players who are making the comments. Why is that?
Because they're weak. Jonathan Toews is probably, I don't really know him personally. I've done some stories on him and interviewed him a few times. He's one of my, I kind of, as a New York guy, I throw out the three locals. If I could be a fan of the other 27 teams and their players, he's arguably, he would be in my top five easily of my favorite players. But for him to constantly, take these shots at Gary Bettman as his figurehead, when his own owner, the owner of the team, Rocky Wirtz, going back to, I think it was around March, guys, or April, he kind of got the ball rolling on this lockout by doing an interview. I don't know if it was an interview, if he gave a speech somewhere, but it was widely reported. And he said, look, despite our renaissance, despite the Stanley Cup, despite selling out just about every game for 5 years, this team's losing money. Well, how does that happen, So, listen, I understand we've all been in those positions where it's never smart to knock the boss, but this is actually a case where somebody can. Jonathan Toews has a contract. He's not going anywhere. Jonathan Toews is a lot more popular in Chicago than Mr. Wirtz is or anybody else in Blackhawks management. You talk about Teflon, John's in pretty good shape. So, listen, I think it's just a total cop-out. My message to the players would be, if you don't want to say anything about your employers, then there's no point in getting personal and chippy with Gary Bettman.
Chris, we were talking about this last segment, the PR battle and these statements that are released by the NHL, and then there's a counter statement by the NHLPA. Looking at this lockout, I believe it's day 49 now, which is just depressing to say that.
Seems a lot longer.
Seems a lot longer, exactly.
Probably because it feels like it started way before September
15th. That's right.
Exactly. How much of this lockout do you think, really is just public optics, political maneuvering, as opposed to, the NHL and the NHLPA really going after the fundamental issues and those issues that need to be resolved?
Unfortunately, up to this date, and maybe it'll end this weekend. Let's have a shred. I'll have a shred of optimism here. Up until this point, guys, it's been 100%. You know, I go back to the first time Gary Bettman came out to meet me and about a dozen reporters in New York this summer on a hot, steamy day. And, you know, it was probably their first round of meetings. And he made a little comment about how, you know, I wish we had started sooner. I wish we hadn't started so late. And, you know, you go back to the league's first proposal, and you go back to the PA really, you know, not wanting to meet for long stretches and saying they wanted more players involved. Everything that's gone on here, and it really hit a high with the Deadspin report of the Frank Luntz PR group, which is just mind-boggling that they would pay anybody to get to tell them that everybody thinks the lockout is a bad idea. It's just been nonstop. My background is in PR. Anybody who's read my work knows that hopefully I'm a lot better at PR than I am at writing, okay? this is what it's all been about. But what I do know is that only when that stuff stops will the meetings really get serious. Any kind of labor negotiations, I forget. You know, one of the beauty on Twitter, as you guys know, is from hearing from people of all walks of life. And I've heard from people, you know, via Twitter who I've been, you know, since been connected with outside of Twitter, who have managed major negotiations on a level of things like the NHL, a $3.3 billion business. And they all tell me the same thing, no matter what side you're on, when stuff stops getting leaked, only when stuff stops getting leaked will things get done. The fact that Bill Daly and Steve Fair are apparently meeting as we speak at an undisclosed location because they don't want to tell anybody, it's silly that it's come to that. It's silly that Don Fair said we need to meet so we're not worried about media scrums all the time, as if me and Katie and the guys who come down from Toronto are somehow the problem in all this. It's just absurd. But maybe it's finally the start. I've always hoped for a December 1 start to the season. That's where my money's been for most of this, and I'm gonna try to stay optimistic and stick to that.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Chris Botta of the Sports Business Journal. Chris, you know, obviously that, you know, it's sort of broken down to be a negotiation between Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman, you know, one-on-one. Do you think there's personal vitriol between the two gentlemen?
Yes. No question in my mind. They'll deny it, and whenever this is done, I guess they'll shake hands and pose for the camera. When we say personal, of course, let's define it as this isn't in the category of, you know, your mom or wears army boots or anything like that. It's personal. It's personal and nasty when it comes to business. I believe there's a major lack of respect there, and it goes both ways. I believe not only that, but that it's not new, that this has gone back to the beginning of negotiations. I feel pretty confident saying that the league looks at Don Fehr's baseball record as a bit of a joke, this idea of 16 years of labor peace, so they don't see it as something he should be taking credit for, and they are quick to point out to a lot of people, mostly off the record, of course, that he was involved in, oversaw many strikes. We all know about the strikes in baseball before those many years of labor peace, and it certainly goes back the other way. And the PA has reason to find it to be very objectionable the way the league has handled a lot of things these last few months. So no, there's no respect there, and I guess that's natural when it goes on this long. But my point is, I think it's been there for a while.
Chris, you worked for the Islanders for approximately 20 years, correct me if I'm wrong.
That is correct, yeah.
And can you talk about, from a first-hand perspective, you know, being part of lockouts in the past, like how that affected the staff of the Islanders in terms of financially and the people that you were dealing with? Can you kind of speak about that?
Yeah, you know, I gotta say the 94-95 lockout was kind of a blur. It ended when I think we started playing in January. Mm-hmm. The Islanders in 93 went to, it was the only time they had success when I was there, and they made it to the, you know, the conference final after being Pittsburgh and what would be Pittsburgh and Washington. I had to think it's been a while.
Dale Hunter.
And then the things didn't go that well. Don Maloney, who had done a nice job at kind of blinked on a few things, and all of a sudden we woke up one day, and Ron Hextall, who I adore, wound up being our goalie, and the team kind of fell apart. And then the worst thing imaginable could have happened, but those nasty New York Rangers won the first Stanley Cup in 54 years. So then there was a lockout, and I think probably at the Islanders, I'm thinking about this at the time, I think we were probably like, you know what, no rush to start again because it was such a painful time for us. So that's kind of a blur. The one in 04, 05, I've made a point of, because I've had a little bit of a unfortunate divorce with Garth Snow through some media stuff a couple of years ago. But I've made a point of saying when the subject's been brought up that Charles Wong paid me every dollar. I was there for the entire year and stayed until I think about 2008. And Charles Wong paid me every dollar during the lockout. Now, we had the New York Dragons, which was an Arena Football League team at the time. Charles was involved, as he still is, on major real estate issues, including the Coliseum project and some other real estate issues on Long Island. And we worked, okay, but we didn't work super hard. And I believe we were all taken care of. I don't remember any major layoffs when it came to that. And in terms of that, it was really good. The thing that stood out for me was the heartbreaking day. Remember when Gretzky and Lemieux came into New York that one night? It was like a Friday night.
February.
There were going to be meetings and sat on the Saturday, and there was this feeling that, hey, the big guys were coming in, and they were going to be the moderates, and they were going to save hockey. And if Wayne's coming in, if Mario's coming in, a deal must be getting done. And we had a game at the Coliseum, I think against Wilkes-Barre. We had a minor league game, Bridgeport against Wilkes-Barre. Place was pretty much sold out. Players started rolling back in, which was probably not allowed, but I could say that now. There was this kind of this joy that, we're going to have this little minor league game, and then in a couple of days, Ricky and the boys are all going to get back to work, and we're going to have a hockey season. And it just went kaput. And it was really, really sad. And nobody ever thought that we'd be in a position where that could happen again. And here we are sitting here talking about this on a Saturday in early November. It's hard to believe. Hopefully something will get done. Mm-hmm.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Chris Botta of the Sports Business Journal.
Chris, we're really lucky to have you on because you're very familiar with the New York Islanders organization. And obviously a couple of weeks ago, it was announced that the Islanders were going to move to Brooklyn around 2015, play at the Barclays Center. Is this move nothing but good news for the Islanders franchise?
When you put it that way, yes. For the franchise, it is, because at least it stays in New York. It stays the Islanders, the crest, the logo that somebody made the mistake of changing briefly once 15, 20 years ago.
God bless those fisherman jerseys.
Yes, that won't happen.
I bought a hat.
So
you were the only one, Drew.
Yeah, there's the blaming. People still have them. It might be collector's items, but it's good for the franchise. It gives Garth an opportunity to play with the big boys in terms of not necessarily getting the Brad Richards free agents or whatever, but really even just those maybe that those next level guys. I think of the defensemen that Pittsburgh signed a couple of years ago, and the Mihalics and people like that who can fill in spaces, whether those are good contracts or not. They often are not. They are often not pay off for the players, but at least Garth has a fighting chance. But most of all, the franchise stays in New York. Now, with the fans, it's somewhat divided. And I think it's, when that news broke, was about 10 days ago, it was so shocking when it finally happened. We knew Brooklyn was the only New York possibility locally, but it still was like, oh my God, this really happened, and why did it happen today with 2.5 years still on the lease? And I think it was still mostly joy, relief that they stayed in Brooklyn, guys. But I think as time goes on, it's really going to start to hit home that no matter what you think of that dump, 10 minutes from my house where I'm doing this call, it's the old thing. I think Bud Collins said it about the U.S. Open Tennis Stadium. It's a dump, but it's our dump. And memories were created there, and of course, starting with 19 straight playoff series victories and anybody who grew up in this area. So it's kind of shocking that they're not there. And I think because they're not playing right now, too, it also hasn't hit home. If they were playing a game tonight against the Jets at home, I think people would be at that game thinking, wow, can you believe this We're only going to see Tavares here in Long Island proper in Nassau County, you know, for two more years or so. So I think we're still a little bit in shock about that. But for the franchise, ask it that way, it's a very, very good thing.
Chris Botter from the Sports Business Journal, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That was a lot of fun. Anytime, guys.
Take care, Chris.
Thanks very much.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290.